Yeah, well, he was busy on the polyester wire enamel, a number of other projects. So Pat Noe told me about this informally at dinner at his farmhouse out there in the Skiuna one night. I thought, well, that's interesting. It involves organosilicon compounds, and I'd worked with organogermanium and organosilicon things, and then it struck me Pat Noe had written to Dennis asking for advice about organosilicon compounds. Oh, he wanted to make a polyester using silicon tetrachloride combining with glycerin or ethylene glycol to make an ester. He wanted something more thermally stable than the organic derivative, and being an organic chemist himself, of course, he thought of silicon oxide. He wrote to Dennis. Dennis showed me the letter. I said, well, no matter what he puts on silicon, if it's connected through oxygen to carbon, that's an ester linkage, it will hydrolyze. It will hydrolyze just the way ethyl silicate does. And there's nothing you can do about it. It'll be catalyzed by alkalis. It'll be catalyzed at different rate, different mechanism with acids. So I didn't see any hope for that, and Pat Noe gave it up. But you fasten organic groups to silicon with a direct carbon-silicon bond. You've got another horse of a different color then. So Pat Noe said, well, why don't you take this up? First, we'd like to have some ethyl phenyl silicone. Could you make it for us? I said, well, sure, I can make it, and directions must be there and kipping and so on, but I went to Navius, and he said, oh, well, those guys in the organic group are always asking for stuff, but go ahead and make them a batch. So I made it, gave it to Pat Noe. I thought that was the end of it. And of course, I began to reflect on this. Look, even if they do get together with Corning Glassworks and you say joint venture, all right, joint venture, still we're only making what Corning has made already, and they will patent and so on, and what's in it for General Electric. There should be some originality, I thought, in this. Pat Noe didn't agree with me, but Louis Navius said, well, if you got any ideas, write them down in your notebook, give them to me, I'll witness them, and so on. So I thought about it. Ethyl groups, what happens when you heat the thing up to thermal decomposition? Well, it carbonizes. You have carbon-carbon bonds in there, and, you know, pyrolyzer stuff. You have black carbonaceous residue, which is conducting. How do we avoid that? Avoid all the carbon-carbon bonds. What? Make an organosilicon derivative without any carbon-carbon bonds. Sure, you can do it. Use methyl. But the Kipping never made methyl silicone. And nobody else had made it at that time. So I said in my stubborn way, I'm going to make some methyl silicone. Well, you look in the textbooks and so on, you can't make methyl magnesium chloride, and methyl chloride doesn't react with the magnesium, and it's all right. You can make it, but in low concentration, has a low solubility. Of course, I labored through the whole thing. I told Navius I'd like to work on this thing, but I don't have any support from the organic people. or anyone else. And he said, well, you know, we had to fill out timesheet, work orders, they were called, and no support for this, you can't work on it. Well, he said, slip it in with the hot point work, and I don't think anyone will know the difference. I'll see to it that it gets by in the front office. So I did that, and of course I made methyl silicone by Grignard method, and hey, it turned out to be marvelous stuff as an insulator, marvelous dielectric stuff. I remember one piece I kept in my desk for years and years, a cast disc of methyl silicone. I put in the oven, air oven at 200 degrees, left it there for a year. At the end of that time, it was not decomposed one bit. It just turned more brittle. But I made methyl silicone in solution. We coated this on glass fiber wound copper wire and made coils. I demonstrated to engineers, first to the physicists in the GE Research Laboratory, and then at the weekly colloquium. There's a gathering of 300 people in the auditorium. Around two identical coils, copper wire wound, they called it surge, with glass fiber. Big thing, geez, so big. One of them impregnated with the prevailing best phenolic varnish, which is used at that time for insulation, and the other one, dilute solution or solution, methyl silicone, evaporate the solvent and bake it in an oven, say at 200 degrees. I connected the two coils in series and off a big variand. What did they call the thing? I don't remember words anymore. But increased the current gradually. I had a big ammeter there.
Like a rheostat?
Well, it doesn't use resistance. It's an auto transformer. Variac.
Okay.
Increased the big commercial size variac. Increased the current. Meter went up and up and up and keep on running current through. Of course, losses in the copper heat the things. And by and by, the one with the phenolic varnish began to smoke. And the one with silicone did not, and keep on heating, and it smokes more and more and more. Silicone did not. Same current, same time, everything. Finally, the one with phenolic varnish burst into flame. Black soot coming out. Silicone one just stood there, nothing. So I said, now we'll just increase it to failure, see what happens. Well, you increase the current, the wire gets red hot, and the silicone eventually oxidizes, and what's left between the windings? White silica, non-conducting. I thought this is absolutely would convince everybody, but of course the engineers the owner said, great, what does it cost? How much can we get for tests? Yeah. So, a long struggle. Well, I knew I wanted that methyl silicone had a future. Maybe it was the only one in the whole company that knew it and believed in it and made sure it had a future. And they raised all these objections, including people in the chemical division downstairs. Said, well, is it any better than what Corning has. Sure, it's better. Look, I'll show you. I'll bind coils with ethyl phenyl and methyl and show that it's better. And besides, it's original. Nobody's made it before. We can get a composition of matter patent on it, and did, by golly. And I said, how very interesting. So I've got nowhere. I'm going to take a break here.
Sure. So the first thing you did, and this was really mostly on your own rather than direction from somebody at GE.
Completely on my own.
Okay. That's an interesting point, because the Corning people, from what they've written, sort of felt that when GE went back from that visit, they saw a good thing and decided to get in it on their own right away. But it's really you're saying Patno's telling you this story at dinner
informally,
and then you're saying, and you, when was it then that you made the methyl silicone?
Well,
would that have been around
1938?
Okay, right after the visit then, or shortly?
Well, as once I had thought it out and made methyl silicone, that, well, yes, dates from 1938, and of course, when Navius heard about this and saw the samples that I had produced and heard what had happened, and I demonstrated in the auditorium, he said, look, we'll have to file a patent application right away. Is your notebook in order? Well, yes, it's all in order there. We witnessed and everything, and so filed a patent application. And according to the custom at GE, once a patent application is filed, you may then write up a paper for publication. So, of course, being publication-minded from my undergraduate days, I wrote up a paper, and I thought this was a natural and proper thing to do. Wow, not so. You see, entirely different attitude existed in Corning Glassworks. First place, glass compositions are not patented. It's a matter of shop secrets. You develop compositions. I don't even know if they can be patented anyway, because you put together well-known raw materials according to a well-known procedure, and you make glass which has been made for hundreds of years, so there's nothing patentable there. So everything was done by secret. But we have to go back to Dwight Morrow, the vice president of Corning Glassworks, in charge of glass fibers. He's the one who went to Schenectady and showed Marshall and Patnaud what Hyde had made. And yes, I have no doubt he's all for not joint venture, as I understood, as explained to me by Patnaud. They wanted to turn over the whole thing of insulating varnishes to General Electric and Westinghouse and Alice Chalmers, anybody who made big electrical machinery, because said Corning Glassworks is not in the organic business and interested primarily in insulation, but in selling glass fibers. The quickest way to get it on the market is to give the information on what Hyde had done to GE, Westinghouse, Ellis Chalmers, get them interested in going in it, let them develop the binders and varnishes. And of course, he had known about GE's work with the wire enamel varnish there, mm-hmm. which is taking over the whole industry, gotten rid of all the cotton and rags and pitch that Edison used, and modern insulation, the phenolic varnish, great thing. All right. At GE, the custom is to say you apply for a patent, back up this, get the first, get the application in, and get the first claims accepted, and then you may write a paper. In fact, you're encouraged to write a paper and explain this. So of course, I wrote a paper. It has to be approved. Well, I gave it to Nobius, and he said, "Well, that's fine. Send it in." Well, it had to go to Marshall, organic, head of the organic people. He got it, and he took it to Coolidge and said, "See here, the Corning people have not published. I don't even know whether they've applied for patents. Is it proper for us to do this, considering our long-time good relations with Corning Glass Works?" And Coolidge said, "No, that wouldn't be right." said, "I'll call up Gene Sullivan at Corning, good friend of mine, we've always had good relations. I'll tell him what Rocco has done." Said he's written a paper and applied for a patent on a new composition of matter, never made by Kipping or Hyde, so on. So he called up Sullivan. In the meantime, there had been a change of heart at Corning. Big change of heart. They said, "What? Giving away secrets? Secrets are the whole heart and soul of Corning Glass Works." And they fired Dwight Morrow for doing this. "You should never have gone to GE. You should never have given up any information from Corning. Horrible thing to do." Fired him. Well, what to do? He had already been there and already given the information. You can't pull it all back in. So Coolidge talked on a telephone to Sullivan, said, "Here's a situation. Rocco wants to send this in this paper to the JACS, but we don't want to undercut or shortchange Hyde. Has he sent in any publications concerning his work?" And "No," said Sullivan. "No, he hasn't sent in anything. That's not, well, in effect, it's not our custom to do this." "Well," said Coolidge, "then we'll withhold Rockow's paper until Hyde can write up a paper of his own, and this will be submitted simultaneously, and so there'll be no question of priority." I was called down to the front office and told this. Not asked, told. "You must hold up your paper until Hyde," like this. And then Sullivan came back and said, "Well, Rockow should have some kind of acknowledgement that to the effect that Patnode and Hyde, Patnode and Marshall had gone to visit Hyde, and there's some sort of derivation in there." And Coolidge said, "Well, we'll write up some preface or something to the article in order to acknowledge that you were in the field before us." Yes, in the field. So he called me down the office again and said, and handed me a piece of paper and said, "Put this acknowledgement in the beginning of your paper." I hadn't been to Corning. I didn't know Hyde. I met a hole in the ground. I'd never met him. I didn't see why that should be put in my paper, which I regarded as a highly personal thing. I was telling about a discovery I had made, and I didn't like it one bit. Now you ask, what effect does the depression have on people? I had a family. I had built a house, had a mortgage at that time. I had to do what the director of the laboratory told me to do, or else resign. I put it to you, would you have resigned in the 1930s under those conditions? I talked to Pat Note about it, and he said, oh, bother about it. The relations with Corning are real good. But I said, it shares the priority, indicates even a derivation. Well, he said, that's a matter for the patent department to worry about. So the upshot of it was that I sent in a paper, and Hyde had hastily written the paper and sent it in on the same date. My paper went through the referees more rapidly than his did. His was held up. Well, I said, I did what I promised to do. I'm not going to invent any further back. I'm not going to arbitrarily hold up my paper after it's approved. No, go ahead and print it. So that's why it appeared in the JICS before Hyde's paper did. But the Corning Glass Works has hit me over the head with that statement ever since. They have spoiled my whole research career with that damn sentence. It plagues me right down to the present. This little book I wrote, Silicon and Silicones.
Oh, yes, yes.
Gee, I always had good relations with Hyde and with Hunter and the other fellows. We're in the chemical fraternity together, so at the ACS meetings we would get together and talk. We'd have meals together and so on. And I thought we had a good understanding with each other. I sent Hyde and
Warwick.
And the third one, Barry, copies of this book, Professional Courtesy. Wow, they came back like a ton of bricks. If you've never written this without letting us know, it does contain the history of Dow Corning at all, and it should. And I had actually written to Dow Corning people while I was writing this, told what I was writing, and asked them when they needed properties of products and a little bit of history, said, would they submit something to go into the historical part of it? Never got an answer from them. They just had ignored me. And yet when it came out, they clobbered me. Should never have done this, a terrible, terrible thing. Not a single Dow Corning person mentioned in it. That's not true. Not true at all. I have put in pictures of Kipping and of Hyde. Anyway, the whole Hyde history, as far as I'm concerned, is in there. Can't always trust the industrial people. Wonderful machines they've developed at Heidelberg, and whether you've seen them, these automatic publishing machines, you feed in the manuscript, and at one end and it not only sets up the type and prints it, but cuts the pages, binds the book, and packages them at the end. See, my elder son lives in Fort Lauderdale, was interested in this. Well, he's an artist, and he got a job. It's hard for an artist to get a job. Industrial art, designing letterheads and doing the layouts and so on. And he had heard about the operation at Heidelberg and the company and so on. So, well, look, I've never written any book that hasn't been asked for. This book was asked for, the very first one I wrote on silicones, Introduction to Silicones, was asked for by the, and so it's gone on. And Springer Verlag, I knew about from Dennis and Stock, and their editor of physical science, when he was in this country, came to see me and said, "See here, we have an interesting little book on polymers, but it's all about organic polymers. Couldn't you write something, a little book for the general reader, telling about silicones?" Well, sure, I said, we would need some background, something about silicon itself, and, well, go ahead and write it. So I wrote it and sent it over there and said, look, it's too much of me, there's nobody else, you should have another a junior author, somebody to collaborate, and no, he said, it's perfect the way it is, we'd like to publish it right away. And so they went ahead and did so. I sent the copies to the Dow Corning people, and wow, they were so mad about it. Well, what to do about it then? Dr. Rainer Stumper of Springer Verlag in Heidelberg, when he came to see me, he asked for the book. Okay, I wrote it, there it is. As a mistake, I furnished the photographs. They omitted the photographs entirely in the first edition, and Rainer Stumper said, don't matter, we'll put it in the next edition, and so on. All that artwork for nothing left there. Well, this is the German edition. The portrait photographs are not, they're not in here either. I thought they would put them in. Anyhow, he said there's no photographs in there. Hey, we don't even have a photograph of you. There's nothing in there. So they asked for a picture, and I sent them this one, which Last Days of Chemistry 1. That's reproduced in the German and also in the Japanese. The Russian doesn't have any photographs or diagrams in it. They said they don't have the money to do that. So.